on your airplanes, public passenger planes, there are in the front and in the back on most of the planes, there are small washrooms. The washrooms have a little lavatory, and oftentimes on the lavatory or the window above, a mirror above the lavatory, there is a statement, something like this: for the convenience of the other passengers, would you please wash the lavatory before leaving the washroom? Now, the idea is that other people are going to use the washroom. And what they ask you to do is as you take the little towel, the little paper towel or hand towel that you have, they ask you to take it and wipe the water and the spots and so forth off of the lavatory, so that the lavatory may remain clean for the others who come after you. Did you know, ladies and gentlemen, and that statement is perhaps the greatest of all tests of real character? That's a pretty strong statement I just made. The greatest of all tests of real character is what you do for those who come after you. Now, of course, it is important what you do for others. But let's go a step beyond that. It is important what you do for others who you cannot see. Let's go a step beyond that. It is important for what you do for others who have not yet come. There's nothing quite that so vividly shows the deterioration of American character as much as the looting goes on when the lights fail, or when there's some emergency, how folks start breaking windows and looting and stealing, have no thought for others whatsoever. But I doubt if there is a character test that is any more accurate than the character test of what you do, not only for those that you cannot see, and those that will not know that you did something for them, but those that come after you, whom you will not see and who will not have a chance to thank you for what you've done, and you will receive no credit, no recognition, or not even any awareness yourself of gratitude that they may have after they've come and after you've gone. What, there cometh one after me. There cometh one after me. I want you to listen very carefully. I want young folks over here to listen. I want you Hammond Baptist High School folks to listen. I want you children to listen. There cometh one after me. What do you do for those who come afterwards? Those who come after you. A little child in school sits at a desk, and that little child takes his pen, maybe, and he marks on that desk and writes on the desk. Or maybe the child may take some kind of a knife, and he may even open that knife and put initials on that desk. A person that would put his initials on a desk or on a pew, if I knew about it, I wouldn't trust him. I wouldn't let him borrow a dollar from me. I think he's crooked. I think he's dishonest. And you children, there cometh, you first grade children, there cometh after you some little ones who are down in the kindergarten now, and next year they'll use your desk. And you are your character is as strong as what you do for those that come after you. There cometh one after you. A student has a textbook in one of our schools, and that textbook must be used by somebody else next year. And so that student gets a pen, and he marks in that textbook, or he turns it like this, and he writes on the textbook. And somebody's got to come along next year and use that textbook. There cometh one after you. I'm saying it's a sin for you not to leave him the right kind of textbook. It's a sin for you young people not to leave the right kind of desk. It's a sin for you mark on walls and paint signs on bridges, and write your initials and your sweetheart's initials on the side of a school building on some brick somewhere. That's a sign of no character. It's a sign of crookedness. It's a sign of no compassion. It's a sign of no concern. And it's a sign of utter disregard for those that come after you. There cometh one after me. There cometh one after me who must stand behind this pulpit and preach. There cometh one after me who must sit in my office someday and pastor the First Baptist Church of Hammond. There cometh one after me who someday must live on the credit rating that I leave him and the reputation for righteousness that I leave him. And I'm dishonest and I'm crooked if I do not stop and think I must leave for that one who comes after me the right kind of an inheritance, the right kind of a heritage, the right kind of pews, the right kind of songbooks. A teenager sits in a comfortable pew here in this auditorium, and he takes his knife, and there's nothing. By the way, when all these young folks over here listen to me, there's nothing that shows your utter disregard for anybody but yourself, and your utter selfishness, and your utter lack of character, and there's nothing that brings reproach on you anymore. If you get something like a knife and carve on those pews. We have to hire people to come in here, take God's money, and the tithes and offerings, God's money. And most of it is in this section right over here, and we have to pay God's money to have those pews sewed together where you, because you're not right with God and because of your dirty, crooked sin and your utter disregard for anybody but your selfish self, have marked the pews and cut the pews. You've taken pens and pencils and dug in the pews, and I want you to know it's not right with, you're not right with God, and you ought to hit the mourner's bench, and you're going to answer to God for it, and it's a sign of a lack of character, and you need to get right. Listen, if you don't have any character now, one of these days you're going to be sorry. You develop it now, or you won't get it at all. There cometh one after you. Somebody's going to sit there next time. Somebody's going to use that songbook next time. Pick up a songbook and see that songbook. Dirty words written in that songbook. I have no regard for you whatsoever. I wouldn't let you borrow a dime, wouldn't trust your word, think you're a dirty crook, think you're a liar, and besides that, don't care, think much of you. And I'm simply saying that nobody is right with God till he has a genuine concern about the comfort and the life of those who come after him. There cometh one after you. There cometh one after you. A young person fills the bathtub, and this may sound like a little thing to you, but he fills the bathtub, the first bath. He turns the water on, goes back in his room, gets all his clothes ready that he's going to wear that day, comes back in, the tub is full to the brim, nobody else has any hot water. It's an utter disregard. You're not a good Christian. I'm not kidding either. There's not one thing about that that's funny. It shows your utter disregard about anybody else. You don't care if your dad has any hot water. You don't care if your mom has any hot water. You don't care if your brother and sister have any hot water. All you're concerned about is number one. And somebody that's concerned about number one is not right with God. There cometh one after you. There cometh one after you to use that bathtub. You get in there, then you get the bathtub, leave a ring around the tub, and no thought at all for your brother or sister or mom and dad that are coming later. There cometh one after you. And let me tell you something. You have as much character as you have concern for those who follow you, those who come after you. There cometh one after me. A high school student sits at a desk in the high school, and across the street and down the street, there's Hammond Baptist Grade School. In just a few years, those children in that grade school were teenagers, and they'll be in that high school. Now, it is your job to see to it that that gymnasium is kept as nicely as it can be kept. It is your job to see those chairs and those rooms and those walls are cared for. There cometh one after you. Let me tell you something, brother. I'm not concerned about a Christianity that goes soul winning on Saturday afternoon and doesn't have any decency and character on Monday morning. I'm not concerned about that, and God isn't either. I'm not concerned about memorizing the Bible that has no character, no integrity, no honor, no decency, no concern, no unselfishness. That's not Bible Christianity at all. Fundamentalism needs a revival of old-fashioned character, old-fashioned concern for others, old-fashioned in honor, preferring one another. And there needs to be a getting right with God and a repentance for the fact you are custodian for a while of all the things that God has given you. But there cometh some after you who have to sit in your seat and play in your gym and dress in those dressing rooms and walk down those halls and use that carpet and sit in these pews. There cometh one after you. It's time we had around this place an old-fashioned concern for those who come after us. There cometh one after you. A young couple moves to this area. They rent an apartment, and they don't keep the apartment clean. Now, I want to stop and say this. Now, listen to me carefully. You folks that live over here in these Meadows apartments, they may not be wall-to-wall off Astoria, and they may be more like the Holiday's Inn than the Holiday Inn, and they may not be all that they ought to be. But I don't care what it is, you're supposed to keep those places clean. And you young ladies don't keep your house clean, need to get right with God. I mean, like to get right with God about cursing. I mean, like to get right with God about stealing. I mean, like to get right with God about lying. I'm simply saying that cleanliness is next to godliness, and this Bible teaches a single thing. It teaches that we're supposed to be clean. Very idea. So what do? Time comes to leave an apartment. And you leave that apartment filthy, and you leave the apartment without paying all your rent, and you leave your apartment with a dirty testimony, and they write me letters by the dozens every year. Dear Dr. Hyams, or dear Reverend Hyams, some of your students in Hiles Anderson College rented from us, or sometimes it's some of your deacons, rented from us, and they left us owing us rent, and they left the apartment in a bad shape, and in general, we'll not be renting to any more Hiles Anderson College students or any more First Baptist Church people. Now, that's not the kind of college we had in mind, and that's not the kind of Christianity that we want to propagate here at First Baptist Church of Hammond. When you walk inside an apartment, and you take an apartment and rent it, you hold in your hand the opportunities that those who come after. Look, you're not the last couple that's going to come to Hiles Anderson College. You're not the last folks going to live here, and there will be people year after year after year coming to this area trying to rent in the apartments where you live. In God's name, you think about those that come after you. Those that come after you. Those that come after you. That young lady who tries to find an apartment after you're gone. That couple trying to find a place to live after you're gone. Those little children that'll grow up here after you're gone. There cometh one after me. There cometh one after me. An old man traveled a lone highway. He came to the evening cold and gray, to a chasm vast and deep and wide, through which was flowing a sullen tide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim, for that sullen stream had no fear for him. But he paused when he reached the other side and built a bridge to span the tide. Good friend, said a fellow traveler near, you're wasting your time in building here. Your journey will end with the ending of day, and you must never again pass this way. Why pause you at even tide to build a bridge vast and wide? Good friend, said the old man, lifting his head, there cometh after me, he said, a youth who also must pass this way. He too must cross in the end of the day. He too must pass in the twilight dim. Good friend, I'm building this bridge for him. And I'm to be the kind of pastor of First Baptist Church of Hammond, so the one who follows me will have a good break and have a chance to have a good ministry. And you'd be amazed. You'd be amazed at all the things I do. To see to it, the person who comes after me has it easier and doesn't have a tough time. I that's one reason why I don't plan to build any 10,000 seat building. I don't plan to do it. We can seat 5,000 folks. I guess there are about 5,000 folks in this room tonight. We can seat 5,000 folks on our pews, 7,600 running feet of pews in this auditorium. And I do not want someday somebody comes after me to have an empty building and have to rope off a lot of the building to preach in. And that's why we pack them in. That's why if we have to go to two services Sunday morning, we will. Two services Sunday night, we will. Why? Because, ladies and gentlemen, we've got to think about the next generation. Selfish is that generation that thinks about itself. Oh, that's what's wrong with this country now. Build the national debt. Borrow all the money we can. Let's get in it so our children will pay our debts and our grandchildren will pay our debts. There's nothing that shows a moral decay any more of our government than this unbelievable, unspeakable, unreasonable national debt we're leaving for our children and for our grandchildren. Pick up my little granddaughter in my arms and look at her and say to her, sweetheart, I'm sorry, but you'll have to pay for my luxury. And you'll have to do without so I could have nice things. And you'll have to sacrifice and live in a communist state maybe so I could have nice things. Better we starve to death and pay our debts. Don't you say amen if you've got a bunch of debts you're not paying. Some of you folks get these credit cards and go up and down from place to place. You don't know how you're going to pay the debt. Have no idea in the world. And you stack it. And then, after you've spent all the money, and carelessly and recklessly gone so far in debt you can't get out, you declare bankruptcy. Now, I want to tell you something right now, brother. Bankruptcy does not get you out of your obligation before God Almighty for the money you owe. And if you've got to wait to the dying day of your life to see those things get paid, you're still obligated to pay your debts. Oh, this, forget those that come after. Forget this me, I, us, our, we, mine, mine. And let's think about those that come down the road a little bit later. You college students. I mean it. It's a pretty crooked kind of Christianity. Comes here and hoops it up. Woo! And I'm glad you stand up and clap. I hope we always do that. I'm glad at Howells Anderson College we stand up and hoop and holler and haven't gotten so scholastically dead that we're akin to Princeton and Harvard yet. I'm glad there's a lil to the joy. But I'm not concerned about an amen or a glory to God or hallelujah from dishonest people. My old professor used to say to me in seminary, he'd say to us, say, young man, I'm not as concerned about how high you can jump as I am about how straight you walk when you land. You have no right to jump high if you don't walk straight. None. None. Dirty house. Don't pay your rent. Move out owing money. Forget the next generation. Not if you're right with God, you won't. There cometh one after me. There cometh one after me. A college student lives in a dormitory. That dormitory has been built by the sacrificial dollars of God's people. You know, ladies and gentlemen, we have no people around the country that send us millions and millions of dollars for the operation here. We just get by the skin of our teeth. And people sacrifice and have built dormitories where you young ladies and young men can live. By the way, we don't have luxury in our dormitories, but you won't find a Christian school that has any nicer dormitories than Howells Anderson College has. You say, boy, is this the nicest? Yeah, you ought to see the rest of them. But I'm saying, nobody has any nicer. But I'm saying this. I'm saying that the very idea of you not taking care, those restrooms ought to shine when you leave. And those walls ought to be clean when you leave. The very idea of breaking the doors and putting holes in the walls. Young people, there cometh one after you. And that one has a right to receive from you the right kind of chance and the right kind of opportunity. It's sin. It's wrong. It's crooked. It's indecent. It's unscriptural. It's not right. Don't talk to me about how many folks you witness to or how many have on your bus route. You're dishonest. Don't you dirty crooks come up and let me hear you shout. Shut your chops. Shut your trap. I'm not concerned about how much you talk till I can see how straight you walk. I'm not concerned about where you go till I see about whether you how much of you is blow. I'm concerned about honesty and character and decency and integrity. And I'll tell you what kind of person you are by what you do for those that come after you. A married couple. Ruins a credit rating. Takes those dumb credit cards and spends and spends and spends. You have a washer and dryer 10 years before you should have one and 15, 20 years before mom and dad had one. You want to live now like mom and dad live now. Washer and dryer and dishwasher. Just keep on stacking up the debts and stacking up the debts and stacking up the debts and stacking up the debts. Go ahead! And then you get a credit rating. Your credit rating's bad. And your name is bad. Some of you folks right now couldn't borrow money at a bank because of all the bad debts that you've incurred and how you pay late your debts. And one of these days, somebody that calls you dad is going to grow up. And somebody called you mom is going to grow up. And they're going to go down and try to get credit, and they can't get it. I want to tell you something. Old Jack Hiles isn't what he ought to be. But I'll guarantee you one thing. I can go to any bank in this town, and I can get what I want to borrow, and I can get it without turning in a financial statement. The other day, I needed to let my mother-in-law borrow $6,000 just briefly because she had a debt she had to pay, and her money was in the bank in Texas. And I had to get $6,000. I called the bank over here and said, I need $6,000. And I'll tell you, the president of the bank said, come on over. It'll be here when you get here. I didn't have to do a thing but go over and get it. Didn't take me that long to get it. And I'll tell you something. When this fellow right here, if he goes down anybody in this country and talks about credit, and he says his name is Hiles, he's the son of Jack Hiles, the one that comes after me is going to have it pretty, pretty good. Yes, sir, pretty good. And I'm going to see to it. What a tragic thing it is for you to have the kind of credit rating where your own children will suffer, those that come after you. I want to stop and say this too. You folks that are in charge of the ministries, the money of the ministries here at First Baptist Church. I'm talking about the college. I'm talking about the high school. I'm talking about the grade school. I'm talking about the bus ministry. I'm talking about the youth ministry. I'm talking about the deaf ministry. It is a sin for you to incur debt you can't pay and hurt the name of First Baptist Church of Hammond so that the people that come in the next generation cannot go anywhere in this town and buy something on a signature from the First Baptist Church of Hammond. I'm not concerned about them thinking we're nutty here. I don't care if they get mad because we're against the dirty liquor traffic. I don't care if they hate me because I'm against the dirty marijuana traffic. I don't care if they hate me because I'm against the tobacco traffic and the alcohol. I don't care if they hate me because I'm against the dirty gay crowd and against the homosexual movement. I don't care what they think about that. I don't care if they hate me because I'm against the short-wearing and pant-wearing and all the rest of it. I don't care if they don't like it because I preach against men wearing long, shaggy hair. I don't care what they think about my stand for my conviction, but it's a sin unto God for us to become nutty and not accepted in this area because we're dishonest or crooked and don't pay our debts. Now, if you're going to go in debt, you find out how you can pay for it. And the day that debt is due, from that minute until the time you pay that debt, you have stolen somebody else's money for that amount of time. There cometh one after me. Yeah, if I'm preaching about smoking cigarettes or the homosexual crowd, some of you Hiles Anderson boys be hooping and hollering like a football game or the Super Bowl in the last quarter and your team was winning. But you're sitting there frozen at the mouth like the Arctic River now. You know why? Because your Christianity doesn't get down below your throat and your collarbone. And you'll sit and look at somebody who has long hair. I'll make a statement. Nobody hates long hair on men more than I do. Nobody. But I'd rather have a long hair honest person than a short hair dishonest one. Nobody hates women wearing pants any more than I do. I've taken my stand like you used to before you got scared. And our college takes the stand like your college used to years ago. But I'm saying this, I've got more respect for a pant-wearing, short-wearing, mixed-bathing woman who pays her honest debts than I have a dirty crook that doesn't wear those things. Debts! Decency! Honesty! Integrity! Honor! Punctuality! Veracity! These are things that give the cause of Christ a good testimony. And dishonesty! And being unprompt, and your word not being as good as your signature, these are things that destroy the testimony of the cause of Christ. Yeah, they say. Yeah. Yeah, one of your deacons, he trades with me. Yeah. He beat me out of some money. And I've had that said in the last 48 hours. I said the last 48 hours, that said. One of your deacons beat me out of some money. Now, I'm not going to set judgment on that. But if that's true, that's just as bad as drinking a bottle of beer. There cometh one after me. A young man comes to this area, gets a job, and loafs on the job. He gets fired or he quits. And what happens? The next week, somebody else comes after him to try to get a job in the same place. Oh, there's nothing that makes me feel any better than for somebody to one of these businessmen around here to write me a letter and say, "Dear Reverend Hiles or dear Dr. Hiles, some of your young people work for me. You give me all of them you can send me. I want to hire them. They're the hardest working folks we have here." Now you listen to me, and you listen well. Now hear me carefully. Every hour that you slept on the job, just because nobody's looking, you are a dirty crook, and you ought to be in jail. Did you hear what I said? If you work 8 hours, and you get paid for 8 hours, you work 8 hours. Oh, this old generation's affected fundamentally, Stephen. You know what? I'm a fundamentalist. And you know what the world thinks? You drive a car that's dirty. You know the difference between a southern fundamentalist and a northern fundamentalist? Southern fundamentalist has two old cars out in the front yard, won't run. Fundamentalist has got coat doesn't fit, shirt won't button, his tie doesn't match, shirt collar turns up. And he says, "You better get born again." Are you listening to me? That's not fundamentalism. Not at all. Fundamentalist, you have no right to call yourself fundamentalist if you don't pay your debts. But you say, "Brother Hiles, I just can't make it on what I pay my debts on what I make. Sell your car and get your bicycle." Or you might even use those things on the bottom of your body they call legs and feet. My mother used to walk 2 miles to work every day. You might could walk a little bit. I'd been preaching a couple of years before I owned a car. You know how? They just can't make ends. Okay! Eat beans. Eat rice. Get you some water and some flour and make you some gravy. I want to tell you something. I had rather starve honorably than live dishonorably. There cometh... Hey, listen to me, young folks. There cometh some after you. If you've messed up those pews over there, you ought to be right down here on this altar before you leave tonight. And if you've messed up the dormitories at the college, you'll be right down here on your face at the altar. And if you've made it hard for somebody who comes later to get a job, listen, there are companies in this area that'll say, "I want to hire nobody but First Baptist young people and Hiles Anderson young people." And there are other companies that say, "Don't you ever send me another one." It's all on the basis of the ones that they've hired. You folks, young people, go to work somewhere and don't put a good day's work and you get fired and you don't make a good employee. Don't you expect me to recommend you to a church sometime? And I want to make it very plain. I do not recommend people whom I cannot recommend conscientiously. And there have been numbers of students who graduated from Hiles Anderson College who got recommended to churches. And the pulpit committee wrote me and said, "Would you recommend this fellow?" And I wrote back and I said, "He's a dishonest crook. I will not recommend him." Don't you think for a second you're going to live here 4 years and ruin the name of the college and the church and the Christ you represent and not care one thing about those that come after you and then escape here with some diploma you got with a skinny thief that you didn't deserve. And Brother Howell's going to recommend you because you're an alumni or alumnus of Hiles Anderson College, not me. No, sir, I think you're a dirty crook. I think if you don't pay your debt, you're a dirty crook. I think if you don't keep up your property, you're a dirty crook. I've said it again and again. You got a pair of shoes, shine them! And shine the back of them too. You got a shirt, wash it! You got teeth, brush them or soak them. You got a car, wash it! You got hair, thank God for it! I can recall talking to Brother Dave about it yesterday. I can recall when we used to move. We moved every month. When the rent came due, we had to move. It wasn't my fault. My dad drank it all up. Mama couldn't help it. We'd move to some little old shack. My mother'd scan that place before we ever moved in. She'd move all the furniture out. She'd wash that thing with a toothbrush. She'd check for cockroaches. My mother can shoot a slingshot at a cockroach and hit it in the left eyeball at 100 yards. Boy, there's one little animal my mother always had a fear of. Bed bugs. And my mother gets to heaven, she's going to check for bed bugs. You wait and see. First time I ever saw a telephone booth, I said, why can you see through the thing? Now, what we used them for in Texas, where I grew up. We had one out in the backyard. Never made any calls, but we got called out there several times a day. A Sears Roebuck catalog in every one of those telephone booths, too. We never got a chance to order anything from Sears and Roebuck, but the catalog was used, I'll guarantee you for sure. They called them outhouses. And I'll guarantee you one thing, there is not an indoor toilet in this church or in a home of anybody in this room that's tiled or carpeted that's any cleaner. And Mama's outhouse. Yes, sir. We weren't even allowed to fold the Sears Roebuck catalog pages. I mean, Mama kept it clean. And we lived in little shacks and little hovels. One time we lived in a little old shacks, the holes in the floor were so wide a snake crawled up through the floor. Mama had to hold me in her arms for quite a while. I was afraid to walk across the floor. Saw a big old snake about that big. Oh, is it that big around? Anyway. About that big around, crawling across the floor. We didn't have any money! But my mama looked at me and she'd say, son, we cannot have nice houses, we cannot wear new clothes, we cannot drive cars, but we can be clean! Man, about once every week, mama says, son, take the mattress out. I had to get that dumb thing, and there is no way in this world to carry a mattress. No way. The hardest thing in this world to transport. I had rather transport an elephant across the country than carry a mattress outside. You get a hold of the thing this way and it flops open, you fall down the thing. You get it right in the middle of the door and when the top half goes through and the bottom half doesn't, and you fall on the top along with the top half and you fall flat out on the front porch and roll down the stupid steps and the mattress comes after you. No way to carry a mattress. If I ever invent anything, it's going to be a handle on a mattress, no way to fold the thing up. But we took them outside, sunned them. Now, once every week or two, we sunned those things. We didn't have a lot. We had some pride. And that's what you need. Just because the people won't know who lived in that apartment before you left doesn't mean you ought to have some pride. We took care of our little old bitty piddling stuff a lot better than you folks take care of your new stuff. Brush your teeth! Use some right guard, especially if you're the Pope or Nixon. Pay your debts. Keep your house clean. Make up your beds. Women should, men shouldn't. Your wife's gone, don't make them up all the time she's gone. There cometh one after me. How easy is it going to be for the folks who come from this church or our college and apply for a job where you work? How easy is it going to be for them to get a job? Oh, a lady sat in my office the day, said a certain large hospital nursing old folks home, said we've hired three or four of your college people and high school people to work in our nursing home or old folks home. And she said they are the most cheerful. They are the most industrious, hardest working people we employ at our place of business. And she said, though it is a place that is owned by the Lutherans, she said, we want every Baptist person we can get in our Lutheran home. Man, I'll tell you, I beamed and threw my chest out, my shoulders back, and said, blessed be God, that's the way it ought to always be. But a person called me on the telephone out here in Hessville, and said, Dr. Hiles, Reverend Hiles, one of your people rent... Hey, let's see back here. One of your people rents at my place, or rented my place, moved out, owe me 3 months of rent, left the place dirty and filthy. I wouldn't give you that much for your Christianity. There cometh one after me. A country amasses a national debt. No character. No realization that there cometh some after us. A generation holds the answer to a decaying country. No realization the importance of us handing to our generation a decent country. A church carelessly pays its bills and wrecks the reputation and opportunity to borrow of those who come after. A college student makes a bad name. A brother or sister back home is going to go to the same college. And they walk in and say my name and he gives his last name. Immediately the faculty is going to think negatively. There cometh one after you. There's a brother or sister coming after you. There's some teenagers back home coming after you. I was in a certain church in Oklahoma. We had two of our graduates there working who practically destroyed our chances of getting any students from that church. Disloyal, critical. And the pastor said, I want students to come to Hiles Anderson College. We'll have to start all over again building the faith of our parents and our teenagers in Hiles Anderson College. There cometh four after me who call me dad. You have no idea what that's done to propel my ministry. I'm almost 53 years of age. Now, I'm going on my 21st year that I've been pastor of this church. And I full well know that it'll be a miracle if I pastor here another 20 years. I full well know that. When I lay this book down, or God takes me on to heaven either slowly or quickly, I want those four who come after me to be able to go anywhere in this town or in this country say, Jack Hiles was my dad. And they may say he was a nut, and that won't bother me. They may say he's a fanatic, and that won't bother me at all. And they may say he's sort of a screwball. That won't bother me. They may say he's not very good preacher. That won't bother me. But let them say he pays his debts. He's been honest. And if there is a man I owe aught tonight, you let me know who it is, and I'll guarantee you if I've got to throw a paper out, mow yards and shovel snow, I'll see that it's settled. There cometh four after me. And a long time after Jack Hiles is gone, those four will bear my name. There cometh three grandchildren after me. And there cometh two more after them. In a month and a half, Becky will have her third. In about 13 months, Paula will have her first. Those little children that call me granddaddy have a perfect right to check his rating, check his word, and be helped and not hindered. There cometh young preachers after me. Young preacher boys all over this land who've grown up in our church and other churches I pastored. Over 115 of them now pastor churches that serve on foreign mission fields, not counting the hundreds from Hiles Anderson College who are out serving God, hundreds of them now. Not counting those probably 10,000 young preachers that call me their pastor who never have been pastored officially by this preacher. I want to be sure that those who come after me will have it easier. There come a thousands of you who call me pastor and little children who sit in this room who come after me. Brother Hiles has given himself for these years to thinking about the next generation. That's the reason I check baggage every Monday morning at O'Hare Field. That's the reason I climb on that one of those stupid airplanes out there and fly somewhere. That's the reason this Tuesday on my 53rd birthday, I'll be up before daybreak in Maine to be driven across the country to Frederick, to New Brunswick to preach that morning. And after just a bite of lunch, I'll be preaching again that afternoon. After a bite of dinner, I'll be preaching again that night. I'll not see a member of my family nor a member of my church on my 53rd birthday. You say, why? I'll tell you why. Because more than I want to live, I want the people who come after me in this country to have the kind of country I've had. Amen. I don't want the era of martyrdom or the sword of martyrdom to pierce the breast of this young man over here who calls me dad. I don't want the children that were born to those who come after me to be taken by a government or a welfare department that steals their children. Amen. Young people, do you know why there's a Hammond Baptist grade school? Don't you stop and realize the work and the toil that many of us have put in to see as a Hammond Baptist grade school? You know why it's out there? It's out there as a monument to the fact that we are concerned about you who come after us. And that's why there's a Hammond Baptist Junior High School and High School. And that's why we have the City Baptist High School. And that's why we have Pastor's School. And that's why we have Hiles Anderson College. Because we believe that the young folks that come after us have a right to enjoy the freedom that we've had. What's my goal? What's my goal? My goal is to work my head off. And I mean this. I don't want anything anymore. I'm grateful for all the cute, sweet birthday cards. I'm grateful for all of the calories that you left outside my door today. I'm thankful for all the little children that put pennies under my door. But I want to say again, inflation is set in, and pennies just won't go as far as they used to go. And I looked this morning, and I saw little hand after little hand slide under my door, putting pennies and nickels under my door. I'm glad for the lady that sang in our Sunday school class this morning, Donna Johnson. As she walked up, she handed me a little note, and she said, "This song is for you, preacher," and she had arranged it to put one of my favorite songs in it. I'm glad for that. But I don't want anything. I don't see anything I want. I don't want a new car. I wouldn't give you that much money or that much effort for a new Rolls Royce or a new Cadillac or a Lincoln Continental. I have no desire for it. I have no desire to go anywhere. There's no place I want to go. None. I've been invited in recent years to preach in practically every country that's free in every country in the free world. I've got invitations in my files right now from Korea and the Philippines, numbers of invitations from Australia, invitations from India and around the world. I have no desire to go. I don't even want to go to the Holy Land anymore. I have no desire. Not one bit. I've been there twice. I have no desire to go again. So what do you want to do? I just want to serve God. That's all. I mean that. I just want to serve Him. And I just want to be able to say, when I've had my last birthday, I want to call you young people square in the eye and say, I did the best I could to make it worthwhile for you. I'm scared to death about our country. I'm scared to death. I tremble. I cry. I pray. I pray for every state in the Union every day. I pray for every major city in my country every day. I travel. I've traveled over 3 million miles now on airplanes. Almost all of it in my own nation. I'll be preaching this tomorrow night. I'll be preaching way up in Bangor, Maine, at the National Convention of Baptist Bible Fellowship, and there'll be hundreds and hundreds of preachers from all across America at that great convention. I'll be speaking 2 weeks from this Tuesday night at the big Southwide Baptist Fellowship. Probably be 2,000 preachers there from all over the country, the great Southwide Baptist Fellowship. I preach at conventions like that over and over again. You say, why do you do it? You must enjoy having all that attention. No, I don't. The truth is, I don't really like attention. So why do you do it? I do it for the sake of those that come after me. Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful if in God's mercy and grace that God could use our little feeble efforts here and around the world to see to it that our kids had just another generation of freedom. I was down in North Carolina preaching in Raleigh, North Carolina. I didn't know they had a big rally. Fundamentalists had a big rally for the freedom of their schools. Had one paper said 5,000, one said 10,000 people at the state capitol lawn there. I was preaching at a church there. It just happened that day they had the rally. I knew nothing about the rally. Little preacher about that high, about my age, walked up to me that night and said, thank you, Dr. Hiles. I said, thank you for what? He said, thank you for the thousands of people that you got to come to the rally. And I said, sir, you don't understand that. I had nothing to do with that rally. I didn't even know the rally was held there. And that preacher put his arms on my shoulders and tears rolled down his cheeks and landed on my coat. And he said, Dr. Hiles, he said, if for 20 years you hadn't been coming to North Carolina and trying to stir preachers to build churches and people to go soul winning and us to do things for God here, he said, we couldn't have had 500 folks in the state capitol ground. I went to sleep that night, tried to. Please take the baby out hurriedly. I went to sleep that night. Before I went to sleep, I clapped my hands in a motel room. Please forgive me. May I be vain for a minute? Could an old man be a little bit reminiscent for a while before he closes the sermon? I left the drive down the San Bernardino Freeway in Pomona, California, and look at that big building there on the right side, California's largest Sunday school, and remember that the pastor used to be a teenage lad up here in Holland, Michigan. He used to drive down on Sunday night to hear me preach so he'd get his fire burning for God. And finally, when he took that little bit of church out there and had a little building, came to pastor school, had his life transformed. On the airplane going back home, he had an experience with God. I didn't build that church on San Bernardino Freeway, the largest Sunday school in California. I didn't build it. But thanks be to God, a little bit of the fire that's burning there, I helped to light. I love to drive down to Hollywood, Florida, and drive past that great complex of buildings at the First Baptist Church of Hollywood, Florida. And remember that that pastor there had about 400 in Sunday school when he came to pastor school. Had his life transformed, went out here on the way back to O'Hare Field. He and his wife and James Maston and his wife got out of their car and made the city limit sign of Hammond an altar and got on their faces and said, oh, God, we're not going to go back like we were. Went back home and got that little church on fire for God. Now has a giant church there. Auditorium seating 3,500 people packed Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. A giant Christian school there. I didn't build that school. I didn't build that church. But bless God, I had a little bit to do with starting the fire. May I be vain? May I be a little bit, maybe, egotistical? Maybe you'll allow me just this one time. You'll have an awful hard time finding a church or a city in this country where we haven't had a little bit to do with it, having a fundamental work there. And our young people are called to teach in schools that we helped to found, and our young men are pastoring churches that we helped to inspire to build. So what's it all about? There cometh one after me. I don't know what you're going to do. I don't know what you're going to do. But I'm going to do what I can to see these lovely young ladies that sang so well a while ago have a chance. I'm going to see to it that you young people over here call me preacher have a chance. I'm going to see to it, all I can, to see to it you young boys down here and you little children have a chance. You have a perfect right to have a chance. And they can have a chance! If those of us who now are on the scene will stop to think that there cometh some after us.